Hebraic Roots Network presents Revive 2022 Leadership Conference, a panel discussion.
Okay, what we're going to do then, we'll have Tammy. She'll be Vanna White. And so she will walk the mic. If you have a question, that way we're still recording this so that you guys can hear the questions. You're not going to give the questions and answers out, maybe? Oh, okay. We got to agree on it. Okay. Yeah, okay. And this is why they're saying this. If people start calling names and this, that, and the other, then, you know, we have to agree before that goes out. If Omniscious and all these people get called out. So, anyway, but if you have questions, you can ask them, you can direct them, or however you want to do it. We'll just see how it flows.
Just raise your hands.
So who would like to? Okay, here, and then we'll come back here.
I have a quick, simple question. I have a cousin that I've just reconnected with here in Franklin, and she's very interested in Torah. Does anybody know about a congregation here in Franklin?
I'm sorry?
So there are scriptures like in Psalms 1:5 and Leviticus 23:2-3 that talk about having like a set apart assembly where the sinners are not in the congregation. Just wondering, as we're talking about establishing churches, have you guys given any thought to whether or not we should make sure that we're vetting people to make sure they're believers before they come in? Or should we be allowing whosoever wants to come in? Or should we be doing Bible studies on a one-on-one basis before they come in? It's an interesting thing that I'm trying to wrestle with right now. And we have people who want to invite everyone, right? Like there's a desire to bring everyone into the congregation. But we also, when we were a home church, we really didn't control that at all. And there was a lot of chaos that brought in. And it's been great with the situation we are now, but you know, I don't want to limit what God is doing either. And so just wondering if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, go ahead. You can do it.
I'm just submitting, so y'all.
Yeah, I'll pick up off of yours.
You do have a thought, Scott?
No, I want you to.
Okay. Thanks, Bill and Beth.
Don't go there, Bill. Don't. I take that back.
So, as you were speaking, so you are in a local meeting place and not in a home, correct? Because I would think coming in a personal home, it would need to be vetted. My mind immediately went to the book of Acts when 3,000 were added to the congregation that day of believers, but I don't know that they would be able to have vet all of them coming in. I think it becomes really clear and apparent if someone actually is a believer, they probably wouldn't stay. If you're really worshiping the Father and the Spirit is present, they're not going to be comfortable there anyway. And as far as if you have a good security team in place, they're watching anyway and checking and making sure. I think we could get a closed-door policy where they don't feel like they're... We have had people say, is it okay if we come there? And because the rumor was you had to be invited, and like that has never even remotely been in our mind, much less in practice. And so it always kind of floored us. Now, we are from the South, and we're all about hospitality, but we couldn't believe that they thought they actually had to be invited to come to the assembly. Where we are a little different, where our father trained us in patterns was, we don't ascribe to the bring the sinner to get saved to the church, you know, like pack a pew day with bring all your lost family members to the church. That's for saved people to be discipled. Go into the highways and byways and witness to them and bring them to be discipled to the congregation. So does that kind of answer your question? I don't know that we need to have a formal vetting of someone if they're lost or saved. We do at Passover make sure that they are believers in Yeshua before they take the third cup. But and I know other congregations go further than that, but that's where we stop. Well, I didn't mean exactly like that, but we're not going to ask or inspect. But the circumcision of the heart, we make sure before they take the third cup.
Yeah, and so here's one thing I do believe that's highly important. We've learned this also, is when you have, say, individuals that may show up that's new to your assembly, your congregation, it is good to, it's going to be vetting, whether you, it's just a term, but we do ask them because I do want to know about their life. I want to ask them, hey, how are you doing? How long have you been in Torah and all of the above? And I would like to ask them this question. Where did you go before here? Because that's very important, because if they may say, we come from Jacob's tent. And then you can call Bill and Beth and say, hey, there's so-and-so here. Do you know them? Or you may say so-and-so's from River of Life, or so-and-so, this is where they used to go. And I do this, and I encourage this, that we need to know who left where and went somewhere else, because did they sow discord? Or are they one of the people? Because look, guys, we're leaders here. This is what we're about. And so their vetting is, that's a way, if that's what you want to call that, it is important to ask them. And they say, well, they may say, no, I was in, First Baptist Church here. Well, then you now know I've only been in Torah 6 months, 6 weeks, whatever. And so I think that's important to ask and to get involved in their lives. What is the Father calling you to? What are you looking for? I think Bill and Beth, they talk about this a lot. As you have different communities, are they of our tribe? Are they a good fit here? They're good. Everybody's a great fit somewhere, And so definitely being able to, not everybody, but, hey, there's, no, well, the cores can go where the cores go. I mean, they fit together, so. And then the earth opens up, and there they go. But anyway, isn't that what you were saying? Yeah, that's it. So, but yes, in a way, without being sounding ugly or whatever, yes, you do need to know who labors among you. No, I'm not. That's what you said. I'm just validating. You do know who labors among you. The scriptures are back that up, and you need to know. And because there again, you have to realize these mothers, is this a safe place? Who's coming in here? Because you don't ever know. So, yes, you do need to invite them, talk to them, be very active in finding out their life story, and go from there.
Yeah. I'm just going to kind of amplify something Tammy said. If we are creating an environment that is pursuing the Father and, drawing closer to Him and promoting holiness, the people who come just as I am are not going to be inclined to stay just as they were. All right? Right? So I think that's important, but also let's also balance it out and keep in mind, Yeshua told a group of religious people, as he's pursuing, pushing them to pursue that same thing, it was a lot of the religious people who were falling off, and he was saying that there are going to be tax collectors and harlots who come into the kingdom before you do. So that's something just to keep in mind.
Of it so that
I was just going to add what we do at Jacob's Tent. We just started doing this, is we have a little 10 or 15 minute coffee after the service ends, just to meet the visitors. And we don't stay very long because everybody wants to go and eat. But if someone is up to no good, you know, if you have face-to-face, direct eye contact with them, they're not going to hang around long. If they see you're inquiring and you're interested and you're going to find out about them, they're not going to hang around for long if they're up to no good. But the ones who are going to be very happy that you took time to ask them the questions, you're beginning the very basics of building a relationship, and then it helps you know more about them. It shows that you take the time that you care to set aside your lunch for 15 minutes so that you can be with them, learn more about them, where they came from, what are their children, you know, why are they here, what brought them to Jacob's Tent or River of Life. And they really appreciate that. And that gives you the opportunity to kind of examine a little bit. And at the same time, we're being examined. And that's been very effective. And it also helps you when somebody comes up and says, hey, who is that person, their name? Somebody, if your staff is in there, is going to say, hey, I talked to them for about 10 minutes. They were great. Or, yeah, I'm not getting a great vibe from them. So the little coffee is another way that you can do that.
Hi, guys. So I'll just announce, so I don't block anybody's view. Holisa talked about planning for the train wreck. Mark talked about changing our congregations to get on to what God's program is rather than trying to get him to change to ours. And we've talked a lot about, or you guys have talked a lot about, helping people who may not be a good fit in our congregation maybe find different congregations where there might be a better fit. And I think that's really kind of like in the immediate future. We've had to do that. That's all good stuff. But my question is more to the long term. And as we see, and we are seeing, all these little groups, whether it's a home fellowship or a little congregation or a few people getting together, as they start to get into bigger groups and we gravitate towards each other and God's bringing together these little groups into bigger groups, what can we be doing to promote or to position ourselves so that those coming togethers with the bigger groups are more of a plug and play rather than the train wreck? And I say that because when Israel came out of Egypt, they were primarily the same language, the same cultural background, the same heritage, you know, with a few mixed multitude. We don't have that advantage. We're all coming from every possible background, and we're also different. And we're bringing all that stuff along. So I'm just curious, it's kind of a long-term question. Is there anything we can be doing now to start kind of, I don't want to say uniforming ourselves or standardizing, certainly not in our doctrine, but maybe in our practice, things that we do so that as we start to come together, we don't have so many of these walls we're having to tear down. It's just a general question. Maybe it's just food for thought.
I think that's always the question. Like I was saying, there's a balancing act because there's very little in the middle when people first come in. They're either going to gravitate toward everything Jewish, or they're going to gravitate, like my church background is much more comfortable for me. But yet, when psychologically, when you introduce something brand new, a life change, that is when a window opens psychologically for us to make changes and to change ways of thinking. So you actually have a great opportunity at that point to teach people how to begin to balance. Because ideally, you wouldn't just run to what feels more comfortable. You would run to where you're called to serve. But there's very few people who really, they're looking for that perfect fit. Is this congregation just the way I want? Rather than, can I work within this congregation for whatever the Father wants to make it? And if I do have, you know, a particular leaning or gift or whatever that comes out of the realm of Judaism, or if I have a particular leaning or gift or something coming out of the church, how can I contribute that toward the whole? But I think, again, if that window is open at the beginning of something, some new life change, if you can catch them at the beginning of the life change, before they're kind of inculcated into some other internet culture, which will happen. And often it's the oddities that will attract them. But if you can do it while that window is open, that's why I think it may not be Becky books. It could be something you come up with for people who first come into your congregation that you feel like will educate them on what your purpose, what your long-term vision is for your congregation, how you envision that being, that helps them to know whether they are a good fit there or whether they could change something about themselves, which we should be changing. Can I change to meet this mission? You know, everybody has to change a little bit in order to meet the mission. But if you introduce some basic curriculum at that point and say, this is why we do the liturgy that we do. Mark and Tammy are just so cool with the liturgy, you don't even know you're doing it. It's great. I mean, if I were to bring a church friend in, I wouldn't be concerned about them saying, why are we doing all this, you know, Jewish stuff? They're doing it. They're just real slick about it, you know. And so knowing where you want to go, if you want, see, from the beginning, we did the basic Shabbat prayers in our congregation, and we did them in Hebrew. We learned them in Hebrew. We had adult bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs so they could become skilled in the Hebrew, so they could chant their Torah portion out of the Torah scroll. And so we loaded up on education early, and even though we've had a lot of people pass through, there's a core group that is still there. And they're very good at mentoring new people who want to become part of that group. And so I'm thinking, for me, and I'm sure they have other answers, but to me, education on the upload, so that we're all looking at the same material, we kind of know where we're going, and they know if they have a place there. You know, some people they do. They just want to fit in. And if in that introductory stage, you know, say, what are your gifts? I mean, are you a musician? You know, do you know Hebrew? You know, maybe they do. Maybe they're coming from a church background where they took Hebrew in Bible classes or something. Help them find their place, but also say, this is where we're going. So their expectations aren't that I can make this church in my image or I can make this synagogue in my image. And I think we all do that to a certain extent. We want it to reflect what is comfortable for us. But as they grow, I think they can be comfortable, even if it leans more churchy, or even if it leans more synagogue-y, or even if it adjusts itself either way. Maybe a more churchy one can, yeah. They can, once they gain trust, a lot of it's just mistrust because they've heard the word Judaizing so much, and they don't have a really good, learning paradigm to be able to differentiate between what really is Judaizing. You know, do I really need to invent the wheel here? If it's been invented for several thousand years, do I really have to reinvent this wheel? But there might be some things that just aren't going to be a good fit because of where we are, who we are, and those sorts of things. But if you say, you know, we might grow. We might add, you know, we might do, instead of just doing Matavu or Michamocha or whatever, and the Shema, you know, we might start doing the Amidah. You know, maybe a shortened version. We might start learning particular things like Adon Olam in Hebrew, and then we can sing it in English. You know, there's no limit, I don't think.
Well, first of all, if I'm understanding your question correctly, I'm going to come from a completely different perspective. Long term, your congregation needs to be what the Father is calling that congregation to be. Joseph had to adapt to where God had placed him to be that person. And then later on, it's the Creator who changed the circumstances, and everybody's perspective changed. You understand what I mean? So a lot of these other groups that perhaps, you know, they were not interconnecting, you know, because they're a little more this, you're a little less that. I think the Father has a way of changing the circumstances so that our perspective on a lot of things kind of adapt to what He's doing. And then we find that people are more open to the idea of coming together, you know. But in His time and in His way. in the meantime, for us, Jacob's tent has to be what we feel the Father is calling Jacob's tent to be, you know. And there's a congregation that's close by. They're real synagogue-y, to use your term. And there's some folks that they feel more comfortable there. Go be comfortable there. You know, go be where you need to be. But in time, I think, is if we're focused on where he's leading us, wherever that, you know, whoever that is, in time, circumstances change, and a lot of that other stuff falls away. Now, that's just my view.
So my question, did I understand you correctly that several of you guys were wanting to come together, several pockets of groups coming together, and you were wondering how to prevent that from becoming a trend?
No, we've seen some of these smaller groups start to kind of bunch up.
Okay.
And so the expectation is, like Bill said, God has a way of changing circumstances. And when okay. he does, we expect that these little groups are going to just keep bunching into bigger and bigger groups. And I just wanted to be sensitive to the fact that we're not so sold on being Derech Yeshua that we can't. I want to get positioned for God bringing all these little groups together, but I don't want to be so much who we are that we're not able to.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's what
yes.
I'm saying. I mean,
okay.
I think there's times that we have enough common ground, we can meet and do stuff together. Man, I'd love to see every congregation represented in this room get together for a Sukkot or get together for something. And I know some of you guys have been trying to do some of that stuff, have these big events, but I just wanted to make sure that in being ourselves, we're not so much ourselves that we can't gather with other people, especially like-minded believers. I mean, we've got 99% in common. And we use the 1% keeps us apart.
Amen.
Perfect. Yeah, because you know that's what I was saying earlier in the session in Ephesians. It talks about the unity of faith. That's what you're talking about. Is we want to maintain the unity, knowing that we may doctrinally disagree a little bit as we're learning, and so that is a challenge, but it can be done, especially when the whole mindset is Yeshua and not my ministry. If I'm more concerned about River of Life as a ministry, and this is, you know, get me a bus with my name on it, then that's an issue, and Yahweh's shutting that down because he's a jealous Elohim, and he's not going to share his glory. But well, like you were saying, though, and that's what we're doing, we continue to find the common ground in our groups. When we come here together at Revive, we may disagree, like Shavuot. You're either going to do it one or two ways, maybe four or five, I don't know, but mainly two ways, and that's okay. And the thing is you feel that this is the way the Father is directing you, and you get after it, and then there's no condemnation. Look, this can't be a thing to where I'm right, you're wrong. You know, it has to be to where how the Father has given us sovereignty to us to be able at River Life to learn and grow and do. We have changed over time a lot, you know, and as we find truth, we will repent and we will change. We're not going to say, well, you know what, Yahweh, you just need to get in here because this is the way we feel this thing needs to run. It doesn't work that way. Telling him how the juice got in the coconut don't work. So, but the thing is to be open. And, what? Don't you start over there.
I don't know that I'll ever heard that.
I don't know what else to say. We're in Mississippi. Okay, she's got a question and I got another question. Okay.
Okay, over here first? Oh, yes.
You guys kind of touched on it a little bit. At our fellowship, we have a lot of new people coming in. They've heard a little bit about Torah, but maybe it's one or two things. Maybe it's the feast, maybe it's the Sabbath or whatever. And I'm realizing that there are some really huge gaps, and I've talked to some of our leadership about it, because we don't have an introduction to Torah class. We don't even have, you know, like what you have at River of Life, about the belief system. We have a card, and they can go to the website, and then a lot of people go to the internet, like what you're saying. So we're kind of scattered all over the place, and sometimes that being scattered, there is a scattering of beliefs, and everything that ranges from I've heard people saying, well, I believe reincarnation's in the Bible all the way to another thing or another thing. So trying to come together as a leadership body first, because we'll have leadership meetings, but I'm getting the sense that you're talking about doing more as a leadership body so that you can be on the same page. And then how do you bring that into the structure? Is it so that you're shepherding the new people that come in and need to be educated? And I'm kind of at a loss in that area myself as to how that should be done.
We do, in our congregation, in the afternoons after the service and after Oneg, we have two separate classes, Torah 101, which one of our elders leads, and they just go in there, the newbies to Torah who don't really know how to defend their...
I used to call it Torah for Dummies, but she didn't like that. Remember all them little books? So, but anyway, Torah 101,
it says sanctified.
Heart. I know, that's
right. So, so we have that class and then a more advanced class where we just really get down and we have our foundation set so we can go, you know, further and deeper. That would potentially make someone that's brand new, they would be very lost because they don't have the foundation. So we offer those classes. And then on Wednesday nights, we have we started this 2 years ago and it was for our young people with the parents. And we called it the Defenders of Our Faith class. And it's morphed into some extra people coming. And what we do is we are breaking down very slowly how to defend your faith in salvation first and foremost, but then Shabbat. And why do you keep the feast? So that they're not just saying, well, I believe it and we do it. I can't really prove it from the Bible. We're giving them a starting point. They write it in the back of their Bible. And then at that point, they write the next scripture and they're learning how to defend their faith and the moral reason why they do something, the biblical reason why they do something. And so these new people are able now to come to the Defenders of Our Faith. And we have a private, we're not really a... we have a YouTube channel, and it's really more for those that have asked for it, but we're not really out in internet land trying to be. We're really very, very, very local-minded. But we do have a private YouTube all-access that's on there, so they can go in and rewatch former Defenders of Our Faith class. A lot of our parents weren't comfortable with our children being seen, so that's on the private side, and then we have a public side that just primarily has the teaching. So we have those two things in place to help people. And my most favorite thing in the world personally is to talk to people that are brand spanking new to Torah and just walk them through 1 John and Yeshua's words, just gently taking them through and just let them answer their own questions with the word. And it just giving them that one-on-one time. If they're hungry, they're going to keep calling you and asking you, what about this? And then what I was reading here and I was reading there, and just giving them what you've learned through the years and the thing that was, you know, the light bulb that came off. Give them that thing that was your light bulb. And a lot of times it helps them with that.
Let me give you an example. I had somebody talk to me not long ago, and they said, and this is the way we teach our young people to Midrash and answer questions. So somebody made the statement, well, I don't believe in the Mosaic Covenant. I said, okay, that's great. So you don't believe in the Ten Commandments? Well, no, I believe in the Ten Commandments. I said, no, sort of like Moses brought them down. You know, you don't believe in the Mosaic Covenant, you don't believe in the Ten Commandments. Well, no, I believe in the Ten Commandments. I said, okay, so now you believe in the Ten Commandments, but you don't believe in the fourth one. Shabbat. Well, yeah, I believe in Shabbat. We just do it on Sunday. I said, well, that's not Shabbat. You believe that you do. Yeah, the Sabbath is not. It's on the seventh day. It's not on the first day. So what happens is we're trying. See, people say things because they've been taught. If you're taught wrong, you know wrong, and you regurgitate wrong. You know, and this is really what's happening. So it's just a matter of teaching our young people to also be proactive in answering the questions, but asking the questions back to them. So let me be sure, you don't believe in the Ten Commandments. Yes, I do. I definitely, well, you don't believe in number four. Then I got to figure out, what is number four? Okay, and then they figure out number four. Well, I believe that the Lord's Day is, well, what is the Lord's Day? You know, I mean, if he, 6 days he worked, 7 days he rested, that's sort of his day. You know, just because you who moved, then, hold on, who moved the day? You know, see, you're able to go and ask these questions, and this is the part of defending our faith, is teaching our young people and the parents. This is the reason why we like the parents here. Yahweh did not give me their children, okay? I'm not going to teach their children something that they don't, would not allow. So they need to be there and know what we're saying and speaking into their lives, and that's very, very, very important. And so these are some of the ways that we're able to minister to those who, look, people love, they love Yeshua, even though it's Jesus, and they love him. They do. But yet they just don't know, just like I didn't know. Like when I met her, I was Baptist. And man, I mean, look, when we pray, we have our eyes closed and we look down. Pentecostals pray, everybody prays. I'm like, how does he understand who's he listening to? Everybody's praying. So then I learned to pray with one eye closed, one eye open, because I'm watching. Because I don't know what's fixing to happen here. I mean, we have flailing going on and all of this stuff. So I'm just like, I got to get used to this. And so
that a bridal shower.
I know, right? You know, hey, we were part of a Daylight Ministries, and they would sing. The only thing I could do is I run the sound. And we had one of our lead singers, we're all praying. Everybody's praying, and I'm learning how to do this, all of us together. I am definitely unfruitful in my mind what's going on. I'm just trying to say, Father, if you can understand what I'm saying amongst all of this, good luck. But this is the way it was working, and all of a sudden, William started choking. Well, they jumped on him and started casting out the demon of choke. So I'm like, man, there's a demon of choke. I don't know what's going on here. But anyway, after we got through, he was choking on a cert. So it was not really Satan. It was a cert. So anyway, so we learn these things. So, but we definitely want to make sure. He did get to sing Hallelujah, you know, but at least we didn't kill him. All right.
See if this helps as well. You know, the same problem, more or less, was happening in the book of Acts. You had all these people coming in. They were new. They didn't know anything about this, you know, and so there was a certain standard that was established. We need to tell them, and I'll paraphrase it, they need to reevaluate everything they've been intimate with, whether it's food, people, you know, what they've given their allegiances to. And then once we have a basis to begin with, they keep coming back. They're going to hear what's being taught from the Torah. They're going to hear what's being taught. So my understanding of that is it's always been understood that you're going to have this situation, and it is a process. And so it falls to you, falls to me, falls to others to make sure that we're prepared to teach them each week, every week. And there are going to be questions. There are going to be more questions, you know, and we're going to be answering questions like that from here on out. But nobody, including me or you, nobody's able to take it down in one gulp, right? It's like trying to eat a dinosaur. Maybe that's a bad analogy. But, you know, we have to do it a little bit at a time. There is a basic thing that we need to start with, and, you know, you as the congregational leader are more better equipped for your group to know what we really need to settle on first and what we need to address first. And then every week we're coming back together and we're learning and we're hearing and we're growing. And a lot of that answers some of those questions. And then you make yourself available when they come up to you. But, you know, teacher, what about this? And what did you mean by that? You know, that's what happened with Yeshua as well. So anyway.
You know, when Bill, when you were talking, everything you were saying, I'm like, check, yep, check, that's happening, yep, check. And one of the things I think that caught me off guard, but I still checked it off, was when it comes to elders. And my question, you know, sometimes I feel like, and I was sharing with my sister here, is that if it's not me and him going, well, you said this, I said this, good cop, bad cop, the good parent, bad parent, so that the rebellious child can get their way. But another kind of thing that we deal with is when him and I are both like, no, we said no, the answer's no, they'll go to the elders and then we get overruled on whatever it is. And I think my question goes to, that's my first question, goes to organizational structure and how that works when you're leading a ministry and you've designated elders, what that structure is in terms of authority. My next question is, and I know we're not trying to build a name for ourselves, but we are trying to create an order. We are trying to create, a way that we do things. And I think what I see happening, and I'll tell you one of the areas where I get overruled. And so now today, if the whole panel overrules me, I'll know, okay, God, I'm listening. But sometimes, okay, so what'll happen is we have a ministry, and this is what we do on Shabbat, and this is our ministry. And somebody will come in and for example will be, they want to do a kid's vacation Bible school. And they have a ministry. And so they call their ministry vacation Bible school, and they want to come into our ministry and do that, you know. Or they'll say, this is my ministry, vacation Bible school, but then they want to use our building, our people, our resources. And then when we say, well, you can't do that, and really I'm like, you don't have a ministry, you have an idea that you don't want to run past the leaders that are put in place. You want to call it a ministry. And so my question is for people who are running congregations, and I know, like, when I see Halissa's ministry, I see it as a ministry that functions outside of something, not something that she's doing a ministry and using all the resources of the congregation to accomplish it. So I want to know about that organizational structure and the kind of the pull and play between the elders and the leadership, and then also how you manage ministries that people are wanting to do inside your congregation, that they feel they've been called to this ministry. I don't know if that makes sense.
I know in our congregation, the Olive Branch Messianic Congregation, Inc., we're actually an outgrowth of that. So there's nothing that we do as the creation gospel that's not authorized and validated and reported back to our board. And we have regular board meetings. So chose that. We could have struck out on our own, but it's particularly difficult for a female to just manage a ministry on her own. All kinds of questions. But I don't know that it's a good idea for anybody to just strike out on their own without, you know, some sort of validation. We might call it a covering, authorization, ordination. Somebody that you report to that can tell you when you just start talking out your rear end. Right? And because if we don't have oversight, we can fall in love with our own ideas sometimes, and they're not his ideas, they're just ours. And you can get, you know, carried away with your own power, authority, whatever it is that you might have. So we made a decision early on to subject ourselves to that local oversight, and there's two other ministries under that umbrella. One is the Apalucky Mission, which the area you've seen flooded in Kentucky on the news, it's our practor in our congregation, and she serves there as a mission. She'll take payment in chickens if she has to, very minimal salary. And then another one that raises money just basically for different charities that some of the kids kind of got together now that they're old and married and have kids of their own. But I think that's important. And I don't know that anybody's entitled to use your resources unless it goes through some process of validation, authorization, if there's not at least some sort of oversight. Do you know what security will be in place? Because you could get into a legal issue. If there's something going on in your building, you really want to know what's happening there. And if somebody thinks they can run something using your stuff without any accountability, that's a red flag for me.
guess my question that flows from that is, if we say, that sounds like you have a great idea, but we need to run it, we need to approve it, or maybe we need to run it through XYZ, and then they say, oh no, but this is just the Father's calling me to do this ministry, they want to use all our resources. And then when the elders say, well, be careful that you're not trying to build a name for yourself. If somebody has a ministry the Father's calling them to do, then you don't want to, you don't want to quash that or whatever. What is that balance between the elders and the leaders of the ministry?
Okay, both of us. Okay, here's the deal. With us, we have elders, and we talk to these elders, and we have to be on the same page, especially with everything, because you are exactly right about this. A lot of times, they may know how we feel. Because they know that, they're not coming to us. And they're going to Tyler, they'll go to Doug, or they'll go to Steve. And then if one of them, but that's why it's always, she said something, you have to plan. You have to plan. You have to look ahead and see what's coming down the pike, what's happening. And you have to plan ahead of time that we have to be on the same page. It's never good. And when something happens, I always bring the elders and their wives in, and we discuss this issue X, Y, and Z, whatever it may be. Because I do know the X, Y, and Z are going to them, because like she said, there's going to be an end run. There's going to be a way that they try to come in the back door because they want to do what they want to do. They don't want to start anything. They want to use your resources, use your Kool-Aid. They want to use all of your funds. That's right. Here's the deal. The deal is the Father gives us a vision. When you have other ministries like that, it causes division because it's not your vision. And you are not obligated to help them run their ministry. It's not what it's about. But you do need to make sure that the elders are all on the same page. It is not good, because I will tell you, and like I've said before, sometimes I can get hung between Jesus and John Wayne. Okay, so when the elders, if one of them, if I find out that when we've talked about things, we know, because we've done this for so long, they already know that this is a red flag. They're coming to me. Why are they coming to me? It's like a husband and wife thing, or a mama daddy thing. Because most of the times the kids come to the dad. And what does the dad always say? What did your mama say? Why are they coming to us? Because usually we're not, because they're with mama all day. Mama knows the backstory. Dad don't know the backstory. He's been at work. Okay, so they come to dad. Dad, can I have $40? And what did mom say? Because here you go. That is not a good move. Because she is going to let me know why that is not a good move. And now we got this explaining why I'm right moment going on. And so this is why it's not good. So you're right about that. You and the elders, and they need to know, the Father has called you guys to shepherd. They're part of shepherding, but they fall under that tier, and you guys need to be on the same page with that.
Yeah, I would just quickly say, as I pass the mic, if it's possible to set a policy in place that the elders would automatically let their first question be, when someone comes to them, have you already talked to Aaron and Amara? Your last name's Aaron, right? Yes, Amara and Scott about this. Because the enemy would love nothing more than to divide the leadership and come in and conquer it. So that's really a policy that we have, and our elders will 99% of the time, they will go, have you already talked to Mark and Tammy about this? Because if so, then there's a problem here. Let's all go and talk about it now. That cuts a lot of stuff out right there.
Did you say that you would be overruled at times by your elders? Or undercut, what would be the way to put it? So elders would make a decision without you even knowing about it. Okay, now that's not good.
So my question is, how do we correct that?
Well, I don't know that I should answer this because we have not set forth elders just yet, you know. But if we do, well, when we put elders forth, it's going to be understood. The elders are there to help bear the burdens, you know, where the congregation is concerned. But when 70 elders, if that's the proper terminology, were, you know, the Father told Moses, you pick people you know, right? Which is very intimate. You know these people. This is not a popularity contest. You know who these people are, and they are there to help you bear the burden. They did not usurp Moses' authority and position and function. So I think I would straighten that mess out right now, you know, and it might be time for a, let's sit down and have a discussion. Yeah, right. All right. But where the other is concerned, you need to learn this word. No.
No, I agree with what they're saying. And these are generally the people who will do the end around, who will try to, we deal with it every year at Sukkot, that they'll say, well, I want to do this. And our policies have already been laid out and sent out and emailed and everything else. And we'll say, well, go back and read the policies. You know, we can't do that. And they'll come up with all these different ways of how it's justifiable. And in the end, it's no. And if anybody in our office were to go and tell them, oh, yeah, actually, you can do that, I would be asking them, why are you taking the position that you have the answer to give these people when we've already discussed this? You know what the policies are. And now you are usurping authority. So we have another conversation we need to have. So, you know, maybe it's not about them thinking you're wanting to put your name on the bus. Maybe it's somebody else's name they're wanting to get on the bus. Something to investigate.
Can I ask you quickly, is your government body set up where they could vote you in or out? Okay. Can you redo that? Can you, like, that's probably not the wisest. Right. Yeah.
Because nobody. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Shut the door. Don't slam the door. They keep slamming the door. Okay, let's have a lesson on how you shut a door. And you teach them until they can shut the door properly. And now you teach somebody else how to shut the door quietly. Let's make sure that you understand this lesson that we're going over so that we're all on the same page. Because it's not a matter of if, it's when.
I'm sorry. This scenario, not elders, mind you, but this kind of a scenario happened today with us. I got a phone call from kind of my right-hand fella, and he said, this is what's going on, and one of our tribal leaders is saying, hey, these people come to me, and they want me to do this, but they don't want me to tell y'all about it. I said, well, that's a problem. He said, yes, I know. So that's why he was telling us, and he said, well, what do you want me to tell them? I said, well, XYZ. I said, but the main thing here is that I'm glad to know that you realized you didn't have the authority to do that. You weren't going to keep that undercover, and you came to us and pulled the blankets back on it. And now that's when the road.
That's when things go scattered.
Oh, well, just to clarify, it was not the tribal leader who was trying to do something and not tell us. It's the people who came to the tribal leader.
Right.
That's awesome. That's exactly right. It did its job.
My question is more, we talked about security and setting it up, and I see the importance of the gatekeeper in the scriptures and the things. And as you're setting up these rooms where the Holy Spirit and leading worship and things, but you have people that are kind of disruptive. Like what does your security look like? I know at Jacob's Tent, you walk in and you have the gatekeeper there on who's coming in, but how do you kind of keep order without being, you know, I mean, you're the pastor's wife in the front row. Do you go to the back kids? Do you have a gatekeeper, or you know what I mean? Like, just what does that look like?
I think she's trying to ask, how do you control the disruptions during a service?
Well, so, you know, you're in limited space, and so we've moved chairs for people to be able to have the worship, but then you have people that want to put down the chairs for new people that are late or walking in, or you have a couple unruly children, or you have just a couple men that in the middle of worship are up in the row and they just start talking. You know, like, who kind of, and so that's not allowed, right? But we've kind of come from an environment for the last 8 years of a congregation where that was allowed. So we're trying to establish that. But that can't be Don Perdomo is the police, you know, but is there somebody you appoint, or how have you, and in addition also the security, like should we have somebody hired that is protective for those things that we never have happen, hope happen?
It needs to be voluntary, don't hire. Okay, hire is not, okay, well, that's different, okay. I'm just saying because he's in a lot bigger place. The thing is what we're going to talk about in the men's session, we might as well talk about here too. There's things when you're talking about security, when you talk about what is your about security. Because there's a lot of legal things there. There's insurance situations. We have insurance. They have insurance, I'm assuming. We were told if I pay them, then you got to have another whole set of insurance. If they're voluntary, they're covered under our insurance already. So there's a different things, and this is one thing me and Bill is going to talk about in the men's session is lawyers and CPAs and how, and that'll be CPA probably be talking about the money later. But definitely your elders, like in our case, our elders' wives will go to if there's something unruly, and we will say we need to move this outside. And then, well, yeah, I understand that. But here's the thing about this. Well, let me just share this with you since you said that, just like what he's saying. Now, I learned this by accident, okay? But nothing's by accident. This is just Yahweh protecting us. What happened is it took us a moment or two to be able to establish elders. So what we did was we prayed and we said, I believe that the Father is appointing maybe you guys. What say you? Yes, I believe the Father would. So we put them in practice for those 3 years or so, and they operated as elders, but they were not laid hands on as elders. And so we didn't, yeah, it took a while because, and in the scripture in Timothy, it'll tell you they need to be tested. They have to be proven to be, just like what Bill said, prime example. Because if that guy wouldn't have come forth and said, you know what, he's not going to be an elder. So he proved and was tested, this is not good. But this is one of the tests, and this is why it's so important. So you can, if the Father is leading you guys, who would be maybe your tribal leaders or your elders or whoever, then you can set them after you pray, and you can talk to them and say, because then if they're not going to be one, you're not setting somebody down that's ordained. Once you start ordaining people, it's important when people are set forth in these ministries. This is not a game. I mean, they get double honor, but they can get double whopped in the head, you know, if they're making bad decisions. And so this is not good. But, yeah, if you have somebody appointed, then maybe in that they can go and help take care of the disruptions.
Don, would it be possible from the pulpit, is it your husband, what's his name, Gabriel, are you the one that teaches and all that? Would it be possible to make
challenges during praise and worship?
Yeah, could make an announcement, you know, at the beginning of service that we want to, because one of the commandments is that we are to keep the Sabbath and reverence my sanctuary. So in honor of that, we would like for it to reverence. So we don't want any playing during praise and worship, because in actuality, Yeshua, the Spirit is there because we're worshiping, and we're disregarding the Spirit. So in honor of reverencing the sanctuary, we don't want talking during service, you know, during praise and worship. This isn't the meet and greet time. Do that during the Via Hafta. Do not do that during praise and worship. Do not be in the back. Take it outside or in the lobby somewhere. But don't do it in the sanctuary because it's a distraction. It's a terrible, terrible example before the children, too. That you're not going to come all up in the presence and think you're going to be doing that if you could see what was actually before you.
Okay, yeah.
So since I kind of know your situation, having been there before, and some of those folks, you ever been on a road that, you know, before it didn't have a red light or a stop sign, and then all of a sudden there's a blinking red light? You know, you ever notice that? Right? You know why they put that there? Changes are coming. You know, so you know, you kind of alert them the changes are coming. I know you've been used to this. You've just been used to going down this road uninhibited, but changes are coming. We're fixing to put a stop to some of that movement. So what we did just very recently, you know, just said, look, you know, you got conversations going on while we're in the midst of praise and worship. If it's just that important, take it outside. You know, and I've told different people in the congregation, people I can trust, not to be a Barney Fife, which is another aspect of the security thing. You don't want Barney Fife on your security team, you know. Well, I mean, you give some people a little bit too much authority and, you know, anyway. So you want some, you know, some wise people, temperate people to be your deputies, if you will. But you do. You need to put that blinking red light up there and say changes are coming. And when we start into praise and worship, that is not the time for you to do this, that, and the other. If there's something that's just really important, take it outside to be considerate of other people, because changes are coming, because this is His sanctuary and we're going to honor that. And then just kind of go from there. But the sooner you do it, the better. All right?
Regarding hiring security, I do agree with Mark and Tammy that they should be volunteers. However, we did go one beyond that, because even though we were small when we started out, we were in downtown Cleveland, and we had a lot of homeless coming through, and a lot of people who mistook what we were and would just wander in, and we had to protect our children and everybody else there. So we contracted with the sheriff's department, and we felt very secure with that, in that it eliminated the Barney Fives who came up and said, "Hey, I'm here. I've done security everywhere I've been. I'm your guy." You know, and you're like, "My whole body's a weapon." You know, so those are not the guys that you want to put in. And that's where it goes back to what they've all said, you know those who labor among you, and take time to get to know them. But with the sheriff's department, because we contract through them, they're covered by that insurance. And if there's a legal matter that happens, they would be the ones that we would go to first to step in, so that then we're not making ourselves liable for a lawsuit because Barney Fife did get involved and put his hands on somebody in a way that was unlawful, and he thought he was just doing something to help. But if you do hire through law enforcement, you need to know that they are only there for law enforcement, and they cannot do child behavior, traffic control. You can't go outside the building. They can only respond while they're on the clock for the sheriff's department to those things that they would respond to were they out in their patrol car. If they see somebody tussling on the floor, which we had a situation like that once, two boys were wrestling, and somebody said, "Well, why didn't security stop it?" And we said, "Well, that's not their job. They weren't doing anything unlawful or that was putting the group in bodily harm, or, you know, an individual holding a gun on somebody or something like that." So there is a difference there. And like they said, if you have people from your congregation who are charged with helping with security or just, you know, keeping good conduct, they're going to know your congregants better, because you're going to choose people who've been there and that you know. And they'll know, is this person just having a bad day, or do we really need to take them outside and bring mom and dad, or do I need to go get the pastor and a couple of the other guys and let's have a really come to Jesus meeting with this guy. They'll know the difference. But you do need to have several people who are charged with helping take care of those situations, because you do need to be there supporting your husband when he's speaking, and you guys need to have that connection. So you need to have someone you can depend on. There have been times that I've known something was going on, and I've been tempted to get up and go, "Be mama, I said, and you heard, and y'all need to quit it now." Well, and sometimes I have, but now we have a team who does that, and it's very nice because I can be there and be connecting with him and, you know, in tune with what the Holy Spirit is showing us. So anyway, I don't want to get ahead of anybody, but I think this man over here has been... Okay.
Just real quick, real life situation. Young man, teenager, comes in. Family's been there for a long time. Grandparents have been there for a long time. He decides that one night, this would be a good night to bring a loaded pistol into the building. You know, so things happen in a backpack, right? He didn't come brandishing a pistol, but he came with a pistol in his backpack. So, you know, and he couldn't help himself. He had to show it off to the girls, you know, and then it's over with at that point. Point being is that, you know, we had our folks that stepped in. But we had somebody who knows here is what the proper procedure on these things are. And you go into this, we just want to get together and worship and all that. People. I mean, you know, people.